Welcome to a Bailiwick Express podcast. This is The Interview. I'm Kit Hanna. This week I speak to Vic Slade, the Chief Executive of the Guernsey Housing Association, a large social landlord in the island that's been in the spotlight because of Guernsey's housing crisis and the dire need for more accommodation. In the upcoming wine-raging talk, we discuss what social housing is, why it's needed, and how it operates compared to government and the private sector. Ms. Slade also takes the chance to dispel myths about her organisation, including the progress of developments on its several housing sites it's recently acquired and the planning constraints on those sites, which must be dealt with to ensure safe, secure and suitable housing for islanders. But first, we jump into how she's been settling into island life and how the social housing setup here differs to what she's previously presided over in the UK. First of all, how are you? How are you finding the role at the Guernsey Housing Association, and what do you make of your time in Guernsey so far?
Oh, so far. Okay, so moved over in October 22, so not here 2 years yet, and it's been really interesting because housing associations are housing associations, and it's always an interesting career choice, housing, because genuinely no 2 days are the same. You don't know what you'll be picking up in your inbox or dealing with, and it's people's homes and lives, so things happen. So it's quite a sort of dynamic environment that you need to be quite flexible in. So that bit's the same. I think the difference is the context. Having worked in UK housing for 20 years or so, there are lots and lots of housing associations providing, you know, a huge number of homes and working with a number of different local authorities. But here the context is island life, smallish community compared to the UK, one housing association and the States being the other social housing provider. So only two providers for the island. Which means that there is probably more exposure to politics than perhaps you would find elsewhere, a closer relationship certainly. The benefit, I think, is actually just being closer to people as well, because it's much easier to pick up concerns or hear what's going on or find out what's happening. So it's been really busy, but really good. And of course, the obvious benefits of Guernsey is just the nature and outside. It's really beautiful. And there is a really strong sense of community here. Lots and lots of organisations working to do good for the island, lots of individuals who want to do good for the island, and that feels really positive. So it's a busy environment, but a really positive one as well.
Great, and could you just touch on really what housing associations are and sort of why they have come into existence in Britain and around the world, and certainly in Guernsey too?
Yeah, I think certainly, I think way back in the mists of time, social or public housing was provided in the UK certainly by local authorities and councils, and particularly post-war building boom, and that's around making sure that people have homes that are good quality but are affordable and can meet all sorts of needs and different needs. Over the years, I think public investment fell away on the public housing side, and so housing association formations were seen as a way of being able to access borrowing and private finance that perhaps councils couldn't at the time. So it was an opportunity for new organisations not just to, it's a two-part business. One is that you look after the homes and communities that you work for and work with, and the other is to try and provide new homes to meet housing need. And being able to access borrowing commercially meant that housing associations could do that, whereas councils couldn't necessarily do that. Mm. So as an organisation, it's a registered not-for-profit. There is no profit made. We don't pay directors. Any surplus we make goes back into the business to make sure that we can look after homes, so do repairs, maintenance, manage tenancies, but also then any headroom we've got can go towards looking at borrowing commercially to make sure that we can provide new homes. But to do that and to keep rents affordable, there's usually a shortfall, which is where the government's Affordable Housing Development Programme grant pot comes in, because there will always be an element of subsidy to keep rents below private market rents
yeah.
in perpetuity. So that's it. That's the business in a nutshell.
Perfect. And you touched just before on kind of the differences locally to the UK. And you mentioned that there is more exposure to politics in Guernsey.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's because of the nature of the beast, the size of the community.
Yeah.
But would a housing association in the UK, say, more or less be dealing generally with the local authority, like the council, rather than here where you're dealing with the States of Guernsey, which is effectively a national government?
It's a government, yeah. It is really different. So in England, definitely, I guess from my experience of working in England, you tend to work more with the local authorities because they'll kind of manage their strategic housing function and decide what's needed and where. But equally, you work with Homes England or the grant provider for the public subsidy element. Having come from Wales, much closer relationship directly with government, with the local authorities as well, but more interaction with politicians, again because of the size of the country, I think. And that's kind of amplified here. So with States of Guernsey, they've obviously got the strategic housing function, which means they understand what's needed, where, what type. That's their role, along with the planning and enabling side. They've also got the grant function and the regulatory function for us. And so you have got that direct relationship across all elements of the business. But in many ways, that's really positive because it means that you can establish sort of good working relationships quite quickly. You can get hold of people when you need to. Likewise, it works the other way. Is that always? Yeah, of course it's positive. So you can have regular dialogue, regular conversations, build up relationships quite quickly, positive ones, which means that hopefully you can work cooperatively to get things done because you've got the same aim and you haven't got those steps of removal that you might have otherwise in the UK.
So it does present opportunities.
Absolutely,
compared to UK sort
Definitely.
Of setups.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. Arising out of that and moving into our sort of next section, which is some claims that are flying out in the community or have been for some years.
Yeah.
And it's a chance for you and the GHA to address them. Are they true? Are they false? Is it more complicated than that? And the first one I want to start with is this idea of affordability and the definition of affordable housing, because there is, it appears to me, some confusion that people are not exactly clear on what that statutory definition means.
Yeah.
So one of the suggestions you always get is, affordable to whom? Or, that's relative. So could you just lay out really what is the meaning of affordable housing?
Yeah. So from our perspective, clearly the States of Guernsey, their strategic housing function, define levels of affordability in policy, and that's set out. And I believe that some commenters on different Facebook posts have actually provided that and copied that. So they've people are good here at sharing information when they have it, really useful. From our perspective, what it means for us is that we aim for the average rent of our properties to be no more than 70% of private market rents on Guernsey. So there will always be that kind of gap between the average private market rent and our private rents. And the reason for that is partly you get the subsidy to support that. So government enables that to happen by providing grant for building. That enables rents to stay low. Every year we review where our rents are at. We plan our business over 30 years. And we look at all sorts of economic factors and stressors and what the bigger context is and what development programme might look like, what repairs, maintenance and investment needs are going forward, because our homes are getting older now, and as they get older they need more investment. And we run all that through quite a clever sort of financial model that's in use as standard across housing associations. And it helps us to set the rents and to try and keep them affordable, certainly within that kind of upper limit. But certainly we're very conscious of sort of cost of living pressures on people. And so we start from a zero basis. We set our budgets based on what we know we need to maintain the business and keep homes in good condition, because nobody wants to be a Rackman-style landlord. You have to invest in existing homes. And then we look at wider context and think, right, actually, what do we need to run the business and what does that mean for rents? So, for example, you know, we'll potentially take below inflationary rent increases or apply them where we can, because we don't want to overstretch people who are living in our homes and trying to make ends meet.
Okay, brilliant. Another big one, this is probably the main one that I see of recent, is this perception that millions of pounds has been spent on land by the states, but nothing is being built. So what would you say to...
I don't think you can argue with that.
No.
I think it's fair comment. But if we go back to the yes, no, it's more complicated, let's go with the it's slightly more complicated. So there was a lot of work done, I think probably post-COVID. I think the government had seen that housing demand had gone up quite considerably. And GHA didn't have any land, but the government did some work to make sure land was available, which is really important. We're not for profit, we're not land bankers. We don't make money from land or holding on to it or releasing it at a point where profit is highest, because we're not for profit. What we do have to do, though, is when that land becomes available, is to make sure that any constraints it has are resolved. So that we can actually build homes that are good quality and fit for purpose. So, for example, let's talk about, I think, Kenilworth, part Lalasha. It's all over the press before Christmas.
Yeah.
As part of the development framework, we were required to do a flood risk assessment for that site, which we did. And once we looked at that flood risk assessment, we had conversations with the states to say, look, you asked us to do this piece of work, this is what it's found, we need to work with you and some help from you to address those concerns before we can actually bring this site forward for housing. Because at the end of the day, this isn't about units or, you know, number of units in that very kind of commercial sense. It's actually people's homes. Mm-hmm. And we have a long-term interest in maintaining those homes over a long period of time. So we have to make sure they're right. So the states had already started looking at that work anyway, and we're working closely with them to resolve that so that we can actually bring the site forward. Same goes for, I think it's Belgrave, it's known as. It's actually two sites. We don't own all of it. We only own part of it, which is Duval. States still own the other part.
Mm-hmm.
There are constraints on that site as well.
Yeah.
It's got emptying points on there. It's tenanted.
Yeah.
So we're doing some work with an urban design team to master plan the whole site. We've involved key stakeholders in that because those constraints also have to be addressed before you can really get going on putting homes on there and doing the pre-work. There's no point spending money on the pre-work if you then have to tackle the constraints, or the constraints can't be resolved, and then you've wasted the money.
Yes.
Because, you know, again, charitable organisation, every penny counts. It's our only income is tenants' rent money. So we have to be really prudent with that rent money.
Yeah. So you've been through the due diligence on those sites.
Yeah.
In the framework of basically planning law and these other regulatory
Absolutely.
Legal protections.
Yeah.
And that is basically just the hold up on those sites, if you can call it a hold
up. So we're resolving those. So it's not like we've been sitting on our hands. So
is there a suggestion that those constraints, as you've described, could prevent the sites ever being developed?
No, the whole point of working through the constraints is to lift them.
Mm.
And that's, we talked about sort of closeness to government earlier, and that's one of the benefits, is that you can have those conversations quickly and early to say, listen, everyone's got the same aim here. You know, we share a common aim with the government and the population of Guernsey, which is that everybody wants to see more homes come forward, and we need more affordable homes. We know that. So the ability to have those conversations with people who can help us unlock those constraints is really important. And in the UK, you know, that might have taken several hoops to jump through. Here, the relationships are such that you can actually have those conversations openly and constructively to say, listen, this is what we found. Work with us and help us to resolve them so we can bring the site forward.
Great. We'll come back to some of the other sites shortly, but there are, of course, some active sites which are progressing faster.
Yes.
And there is material, measurable progress on them. So, for example, we have the CI Tyre site.
Yes.
We have the Oberlands, which has just been approved.
It has.
And we've got also the recent announcement on Point Rocks.
Yep.
So, two of those are this sort of new public-private approach, if I can call it that.
Yeah.
Could you just describe, for those two in particular, how this kind of new way of thinking came about and why you think it's sort of necessary or a constructive way forward?
Let's take Oberlands as the example then. So that site was in private ownership, prime site right opposite the hospital to help to provide homes there. So that's about negotiation with the landowner to say, would they be prepared to work with us to share the site? They've got great skills in construction and development, and we obviously, with the backing of the states, are in a position to be able to negotiate with them to build some houses for us that we pay for on that site, making sure that the costs stack up obviously for us, because again it's public money and you need to get value for money. But working that way means you've got a really good mix of skills, you've got access to existing skills. And I think Infinity, for example, as the owners of that site, have been very clear from the get-go that they want to provide some homes that provide some public good. So there's that interest as well, which is really positive. What it means is, because of their commercial experience and their ability to manage in a commercial way, we think we will make better use of the existing grant funding pot. We can get better value for money, and we can also get a really good quality product by working with them. And they will fulfil, I think, one of their ambitions, which is to try and do some good for the island. So it's for them, it's not just about the pure commerciality and profit. They actually want to do some good, and we can do that on a mixed site where it lends itself to that.
Yeah.
It's not going to lend itself to every site, but what's been really positive here in Guernsey is the ability, again, because of the size of the island and kind of access to people and getting to know people without having to jump through lots and lots of hoops and quite a lot of distance, you can have those conversations quite early, and that's what's happened in the case of Oberlands. And we will continue to look at different sites where that makes sense to have kind of mixed provision. That's around providing sustainable communities and not seeing perhaps a degree of the kind of mono-tenure separation that you might see on some of the large housing estates that have been provided as new build in the UK.
Mm.
It's about recognising that income should not be the defining factor in how you live, in terms of living well, living in a good quality home. Everyone's an islander, it's about mucking in and getting on together, and I think Guernsey has got a really strong sense of that community.
That's great, and I appreciate that Point Rock is a live negotiation, and it's a slightly different approach being, or hope to be taken there, than what's been done at the Oberlands, is that right?
Yeah, Point Rock is going to be really interesting, and it is at an early stage, and I can't say too much about that. But again, I think there's a real willingness from the owners, different owners on the site, to engage with us and talk to us about what could be possible and what could happen. And that again would be potentially a sort of mixed site because it's in private ownership. So we're taking that forward pretty much with those principles in mind that we're using for Oberlands, which is how can we create with others a well-designed, well-constructed, sustainable community for the island.
But the hope is to increase the provision of public housing, as it were.
Yeah, I think under, so originally for that site with GP11, it would have been a smaller number of homes just for GP11. But again, by having the conversation early with States of Guernsey and with the owners, we've talked about public grant being used as an enabler to actually bring a site forward. And if we can increase the number of homes that we can provide there for affordable tenures, that can only be a good thing. Mixed community again, but as a strategic housing authority, the states absolutely understand they have an enabling role, which is to try and help supply and try and help bring sites forward. Which is great, because we know that need is acute.
Yeah. And just on GP11, obviously the states have just zero rated it effectively for 5 years.
Yeah.
I just wondered what the sort of your views on the decision of the resolution of the states. There's also some question marks over whether that will actually have any effect on the planning law by changing the supplementary planning guidance.
Yeah, I listened to the debate, and it was really interesting, because, and I guess that's a one of the nice things, I guess, about the way democracy in Guernsey works, is that there is an opportunity for everyone to speak and for everyone to be heard. And so you do get an awful lot of different perspectives, which is really useful. The decision is the decision. The equivalent policy in the UK works to some extent, not always, and I think a lot of it depends on land supply. In Guernsey, we're really constrained on supply. So I think it's really interesting that the states have taken the view that actually we haven't seen anything sort of come from this so far. It's been quite a long time, I think, that they've waited. So actually, let's see what zero rating can actually deliver. And I think that's going to be really important. If there is an appetite out there to increase supply, and the zero rating helps do that, I can't see why anybody would complain about that, because we're part of the solution on supply, but we're not the only solution. Mm. Wider private market supply will help free up homes and kind of encourage movement.
Yeah.
So I think if the zero rating helps to deliver more supply, then that's going to be really, really positive for the island.
Okay. So moving on to some of the other sites, we've discussed Knoworth, also the Duval, mm-hmm. Fontaine, Belgrave,
yeah,
that
Belgrave,
sort of
yeah.
stuff. There are others. So Bray Lodge.
Yeah.
We've got La Vie Plage.
Yeah, Vie Plage.
And the Data Park.
Yes.
So what's the kind of sit rep on those sites, really?
I like your phraseology there, sit rep. So with Bray Lodge, we're engaging with planning and looking at design at the moment, which is really important to get that right, making best use of the land that's there. With VL Plage, that's on site and it's underway, and that's specialist accommodation. So again, it's, you know, that's really important. There's quite a lot of PR at the time, I think, and some of the HSE colleagues, staff were on the news explaining the reasons why that was so important. And I think it is important not to lose sight of that, you know, there are people with specialist needs who were living in unsuitable accommodation. So again, as part of the state's strategic housing role, it's about making sure that everybody has a home that's fit for purpose. So VL Plage is a really important scheme, I think a really important development. 14 homes there, so that's going to be really, really positive. Data Park is an interesting one. It was always, it obviously is owned for light commercial, it was always slated to be included in the IDP review, which is currently underway,
mm-hmm.
And has gone, it's gone into the call for sites. So what we're hoping there, realistically, site wouldn't have been purchased if there wasn't a chance of it happening, is that the majority of that site will be zoned for housing. So if we can unlock constraints on Belgrave, Park La Lasha, and Data Park, it's got to go through that IDP process though, then that will be providing a big chunk of new affordable tenures. Plus, obviously, while we're addressing those constraints, because that's a constraint for that site that needs to be overcome, as you rightly point out, we haven't been sitting on our hands, which I think is probably one of the most frequent things that I see on social media. What are the GHA doing? Why aren't they doing anything? We are doing stuff. It's just that, you know, it does take time when you've got land, but you need to address constraints. You address the constraints, but in the background, you're working away furiously to try to bring forward other sites.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing.
And maybe the most advanced one was the CI Tyres site. So you've got planning application.
Yes.
The designs are in, have been for some time.
Yep.
And clearance work is underway on that site.
Yeah. So it's been, and again, it's, you know, that's a complex site because obviously there's the sort of cliff behind. So you've got to look at all of the cliff stabilisation design. The state's really keen to try and increase density on the site, so right building in the right place. So that was the right thing to do. So that's taken quite a lot of work. And then obviously once you've got the designs, you need to then make sure that the cliff stabilisation profiling fits with the design and vice versa. A bit chicken and egg, but you get there in the end. So that work has got to be planned for, it's got to be done well and done properly. There was a lot of work to be done around the ABI, the kind of protected trees, and that site at the top as well, just to try and make sure, I think you're providing a net gain around biodiversity, hugely important. We do need to do that. So quite a lot of work still to do, I would say. But I think the OPM, the Open Planning Meeting, and sort of seeing the scheme debated and kind of scrutinised at that meeting with a positive result was just really great. So really happy with that. But the really hard work starts now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So moving on then, we've obviously just spoken a lot about kind of projects in the pipeline and hopes and aspirations. Around Christmas time or perhaps November last year, there was a suggestion in the States from some that the Guernsey Housing Association was taking a more cautious approach to house building. And the States have obviously resolved, it's not a target, but they have basically indicated that they need a high level of homes, thousands of homes by the next decade, and to obviously to deliver that, they would need a very aggressive house building program. So is there truth to that, or has the feeling sort of changed or shifted since that time? Obviously, well, 5 months, maybe half a year down the line.
Yeah, let's go with that. It's a bit more complicated.
Yeah.
Let's go with that, shall we? So as a housing association, you know, we've gone from scratch 21 years ago nearly, to just over 1,000 homes. That's 20 years. Just to kind of try and put some context around some of that. I think asking an organisation to do the same again in half the time or less may be a bit of an unrealistic ask, given the construction capacity on the island. Also the fact that interest rates and borrowing has become much more difficult. It's not the benign kind of financial environment that it once was. So it kind of feels like the perfect storm, and I can understand why it might appear to some politicians, oh, GHA are dragging their feet. GHA risk averse. That new woman in charge at GHA is very risk averse. And I think that doesn't allow for an understanding of the wider economic context that we find ourselves in, or recognition of the fact that we are actually a housing association that has a development programme. We're not a development company that dabbles in housing management. And we have got a duty to the tenants who pay their rent to us and that pays for everything that we do to make sure that homes and services we provide to them are good quality. Now, homes are getting older and they do need a bit more investment as they get older. So we have to rebalance that kind of focus. We have to say, right, homes are getting older, people need to live in good quality housing. We've had all the stuff in the UK, Rochdale, Grenfell. Housing quality is really, really important and we take it very seriously. So we've got to be mindful of that and try to work out in a new financial environment. Cost of borrowing has gone up. We borrow for development. We don't get a handout from the states. The states pay a small subsidy for public housing because it's part of it's their role as a housing enabler for the island. But we have to borrow commercially to be able to develop. And we have to be able to pay that back from rents, which are being squeezed in the cost of living crisis. You can't just keep putting rents up and expecting people to pay. So all of those things have come at once. And yes, I guess it's a risk. It's a risk issue. You have to, as any organisation does, there are risks to your business and you have to be thinking long term about what those risks are, how you manage and mitigate them so that you can continue to deliver your core functions. If you didn't manage risk, I'd suggest you'd be called reckless. And we're not in the business of being reckless when it's people's homes and lives and public money involved.
And would you say the same applies to, you know, sort of carrying out the proper due diligence on the sites with regard to flood risk, etc.?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Who would feel comfortable as a public organisation in receipt of public money saying to people, there's your homes, you can move in now, and you know what is predicted from modelling actually happens? What would you say then? What would you do then? The insurance risks, the mortgage risks. We have to do the right thing. We're a responsible landlord. We're in our business for the long term. We don't get to walk away once things are sold or rented. We are the presence that's there all the time. And so we have a responsibility to people who live in our homes to make sure they're well constructed, well thought through, well built. And that there aren't problems for people moving into those homes on sites. We have to address those constraints first.
Okay, great. Of course, the states have also, I just remembered, that they approved a borrowing facility.
They did.
It was. I can't remember the exact amount.
They did.
But it is significant over a period of decades.
Yeah.
And that can be lent to you it's deliberately left open for another housing provider, et cetera, et cetera. Does that bolster you or help you?
Of course it helps. It's really positive. So that was last autumn was the resolution. Treasury have worked really, really hard to make that happen. And of course it does, because if you can work with the government to borrow through the government, particularly at a time of relative uncertainty still over rates and the cost of money, if you can bring some certainty into the business for the long term, and that kind of commercial borrowing, it means you can plan your business much better. You're not having to factor in uncertainty. So the fact that the states have done that is really, really super helpful for us. So we're really grateful for that. And again, I think that's a positive of being able to have conversations about what's happening and where we're at, that shared aim of providing more affordable homes, and actually what are the barriers to doing that. So absolutely, the states have helped remove a significant barrier for us. And yes, they have left it open. And I think that's been in the press a fair bit off and on recently. And I think our response to that, because you kind of know what questions are coming, is that if the states, there's two things. The states already have an action in the published Guernsey Housing Plan to explore a delivery model for housing, which is really positive. Mm-hmm. That was published quite a while ago, so that's not news. It's not recently out there. It's been around for a while. And I think that's a positive idea, because the level of, I talked to you earlier about what we've achieved in terms of new build over 20 years and the pressure on the states now and kind of housing need. It's everyone's priority. That's what everyone's saying. So it makes sense for the states to look at ways they can assist with supply. So I think it's positive that it's in the housing plan. And then the talk of another housing association, not another housing association. Again, the states have got a strategic housing responsibility to the island. And so our priority is to help people in housing need. The state's priority is to help people in housing need. And it's right that the state should consider any option available to them to make that happen. We're part of a solution. We are not the solution, because private market supply comes into this and housing standards comes into this and all sorts of other things come into housing. It's not just build at any cost. There's all sorts of things to be considered. So if the states are prepared to consider wider options, then I think we view that as a positive.
Yeah, so there's no fear that any new introduction into the public or private housing market as a provider or delivery unit would undermine you in any way, because you have your properties, you have your development projects, and you know, that would be, that's self-contained almost.
It is self-contained, and it's interesting, in the UK you work closely with your housing association peers. You'll quite often work on joint projects, joint programmes, you'll share skills. We've already got, there is another social landlord on the island, that's the states. There's us, the housing association, the development programme. As a sector, the housing sector generally is really, really cooperative and collaborative, because people don't come into this as a career for the glamour and the money. You come into it because you actually want to do something good. And put something back. So people are driven by the same aim, and there's usually a huge degree of cooperation to try and make good things happen. I don't see why that would be any different, but that's really something for the states to decide and determine and work out what's going to be best for Guernsey in the long term.
Brilliant. Final really challenging one, I guess, and it might be more of a political question, but you might have some interesting insight on it. There is a suggestion from some private developers that the state's recent acquisition of land has inflated land values. Is that the case? Do you have any sort of...
Inflated? The state's...
So they're saying
by buying land...
Having land is kind of having a knock-on effect on the private development market.
I suppose I'd counter that with the question is whether those sites were something that the private development market were interested in the first place, and I would probably say no, they're not. I think from our perspective it's interesting, because there is this kind of thing doing the rounds that I've seen on social media and seen other people say on TV or in the press. Oh, GHA pay too much for their sites. Well, GHA actually get independent valuations of sites, and sites are valued on the basis of kind of existing use value. But from our perspective, they have to be valued a certain way to comply with social housing accounting protocols, which we follow. So I'll put that one to bed straight away and just say that we follow a very strict valuation process. So we rely on the professionalism and integrity of valuers to make sure that they are valuing sites correctly in the first place. I can't speak to the state's processes, but that's our process.
Mm. Okay, great. Are there any other sort of misconceptions that you think aren't in the public eye or that I've asked you today that you think should be sort of battered down, or any other things that you think deserve some light put on them?
I think I kind of mentioned it earlier. I think this is a perception that kind of sometimes carries in the UK as well, so I'm not really surprised that there might be elements of it here. And that's really putting the message out there that we're not for profit. we're not a profit-making enterprise. Any surplus we make is generally a technical surplus, but it goes back into the business. It goes back into people's homes and it goes back into services. We don't make profit. We actually, you know, we're a registered not-for-profit. I think the other point I'd like to make is that our board of directors aren't paid, and they are volunteers, and they give up a huge amount of their time to help us run our organisation, and we're hugely grateful for that. But I do see some comments and things on social media talking about people taking money out of the business or how much do they get paid, and actually they're volunteers, and that's really important. They do this and they're involved with us because they want to do some good for Guernsey. So yeah, that's the final thing I'd probably really like to put out there, is that as an organisation we're incredibly grateful to them giving up their time as volunteers to help us.
Great. And I'd just like to end with, kind of since you came into this post, what's the demand change been like? Are you seeing an increase on the waiting lists? And you might not know off the top of your head, but what's the sort of state of play right now for all your properties that you offer?
Yeah, I think we hold the partial ownership waiting list and the states hold the rental waiting list, so separate things. Partial ownership has probably remained steady, but people are waiting a long time. So acutely aware of that. Waiting lists are what's called secondary housing need indicators. The biggest indicator we have of housing need is the state strategic housing need indicator, which I think they're now updating annually, which is really positive. And I think what you can see really from the indicator when it was published last year, and probably what we may see again this year, is that that demand is increasing. And we know generally across the island, I think there's been stuff in the press this week, you know, that we've got this kind of, we've got this need, an increased need generally across the population for more homes. And I think the housing plan was quite interesting because it talks about it's not just having more homes, it's having the right type of homes and enabling people to live in a home that suits their particular needs. You might start as a single in a flat and end up needing something where you've met the love of your life and you've got a burgeoning family. And people's housing needs and aspirations change over time. Notwithstanding that, we've got other things in the background, like where you've got specialist need and people need to live in suitable homes and accommodation. So I think need is definitely, it's a pressure that's not going away. And I fully expect the next iteration of the indicator to show that it's probably increased.
Yeah.
So yes, there is an absolute need for everyone to work constructively together, I would say, to try and address the supply issue, but try and do it in a sensitive way that's sensitive to everything that everybody loves about this living in this island, which is about making sure that homes are well designed and that communities are well designed, and that we build in the things that make them livable for the long term.
And look after them throughout their whole
lifetime.
And look
after them through their lifetime, absolutely.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Vic Slade, Chief Executive of the Guernsey Housing Association, thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a Bailiwick Express podcast. If you like what you heard, please share, like and subscribe so we at Bailiwick can continue to pull apart the stories that affect you, the listener. Thank you for joining us.